interests. Rossi's lips part slightly, her stance straightening. She gazes again at the buzz droids, the muscles in her cheeks tensing, then relaxing, then tensing again. Her fingers are in motion, the thumb and forefinger of her right hand rubbing gently together.
Mark ones, you said?
I did. Mark ones, she murmured. Her voice carries the mix of tension and interest that indicates sudden understanding. Her hand makes a small movement toward her data pad, then stops.
All right. I'll meet you halfway. We're due back at Ancien in 3 months. You can have until then to play with your toys. Once we reach Ancien, I'm taking them, working or not. Clear?
Clear, ma'am,
Thrawn said.
Thank you.
Rossi looks at Daland, then at the droids. The tension lines in her face smooth out. She brushes past Daland to the bay's exit.
At your convenience, Senior Lieutenant Daland,
she called back over her shoulder.
Yes, ma'am.
Daland gives a small smile of satisfaction, then follows the captain back into the corridor. They continue aft, the rest of the officers again forming up behind them.
Well? Vanto asked quietly as he reached the bay.
His expression holds both anticipation and dread.
Is she making you throw it all out?
Why would you assume that?
Because Virgilio let you have it, and Rossi's going to try to wipe every trace of him off the Blood Crow,
Vanto said.
His voice holds a low level of bitterness.
Trust me, I've seen her type a lot.
Interesting, Thrawn said.
As it happens, she has agreed to allow me until the end of our current patrol to bring the items to full function.
Generous of her. I presume there's a catch?
I reminded her that they would become her property.
Ah,
Vanto said.
He nods in understanding.
And you remembered what I said back when you first got them about collectors and non-intrinsic value?
I did. I thank you for that insight.
You're welcome,
Vanto said.
I don't suppose you happened to mention that the buzz droids were already fully operational.
She did not ask. But I believe she also came to a belated realization that they have a value beyond even the non-intrinsic lure to collectors. Do you remember a metal called Dunium from our technical classes?
Oh, I knew Dunium long before I got to Royal Imperial, Vanto said. Dad always put on extra security whenever we were lucky enough to carry a crate or two of the stuff. But there's no Dunium in buzz droids.
There was in Mark I models, Thrawn said. It was a shell protecting the brain core. It was removed in later models because the cost outweighed the defensive benefits.
So rare and intrinsically valuable, Vanto said.
He nods in understanding.
You say the captain figured out that last part herself?
I believe so. She reached for her data pad, presumably intending to confirm her memory of the Mark I construction, but then changed her mind.
Didn't want to make a big deal of it in front of everyone, Vanto said. She'll wait until she's alone.
He smiles with cynical amusement.
And then will no doubt congratulate herself on her memory and insight on putting one over on her poor, naive weapons officer.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. And we should probably rejoin the others.
Right.
Vanto starts down the corridor at a quick walk.
Hopefully Daland also won't mention the droids are functional. If he does, Rossi will probably take them right now, and you won't get to fiddle with them anymore.
He said nothing at the time.
Good for him, Vanto said. Of course he does owe you. Getting blindsided when those Delphidians made a run for it could have been embarrassing.
Possibly lethal as well.
Very possibly,
Vanto agreed.
Thrawn!
A distant bellow echoed down the passageway.
I believe they have reached the electronics repair shop, Thrawn said.
And found the other part of your hyperdrive ring, Vanto said.
Yeah, we might want to hurry.
It took a week for Captain Rossi to come fully up to speed on her new command and to acquaint herself with her ship, her officers, and her crew. She was, Eli had to admit, pretty good at it. By the end of the second week, she was being spoken of with cautious acceptance by most of the crew, and was well on her way to good working relationships with most of her officers. With two glaring exceptions. Eli, of course, was the second one. The most frustrating part was that he'd predicted the problem right from the start. The captain had an aide, non-human Lieutenant Thrawn had one, and no one else aboard ship did. It wasn't proper protocol. It certainly wasn't proper tradition. And in the Imperial Navy, those two things were the bedrock on which everything else was built. It had taken Captain Virgilio some time to get used to the idea. It had taken Senior Lieutenant Dayland even longer. Neither man, Eli suspected, had ever been really happy with it. Eli wasn't expecting Rossi to ever get used to it or accept it. Unfortunately, there were an infinite number of ways a commander could show her displeasure with something, or with someone. Sure enough, over the next month, Eli saw a clear pattern developing. Every nasty, dirty, or undesirable job somehow ended up on Thrawn's list. If it was a job that an officer couldn't legitimately be ordered to do, Thrawn would still be tasked with overseeing the procedure. And as Thrawn's aide, Eli was usually assigned the job right along with him. Thrawn took it with stoic good grace. Eli made sure his own annoyance was equally invisible. The slightest hint of insubordination, he knew, and Rossi would be on him like a tusked cat on a shock. So when the Blood Crow picked up a distress call from a freighter carrying a cargo of static-locked Tabana gas, Eli knew exactly who would be leading the boarding party.
If I understand correctly, Thrawn said, as Ensign Mary Barlin maneuvered their shuttle between the Blood Crow and the derelict freighter, Dromedar. The most disagreeable part of this duty is the dust?
Yes, sir,
Eli said, looking at the man and woman sitting silently in the jump seats along the shuttle's walls. Neither of them looked particularly happy with their assignment either.
Electronics tech Lanio has had experience with static locking,
Eli continued, gesturing to the woman.
Care to elaborate on the problem?
As Ensign Vanto says, sir, there's dust,
Lanio said, her face wrinkling briefly with disgust.
A lot of it. Something about static locking brings the stuff out of every nook and cranny on a ship and deposits it neatly on your uniform and skin. You come out looking like a dirt miner.
It sticks to fabrics especially well, Engineering Tech Jakib added. You usually have to run your uniform through the cleaner twice to get everything out.
And we all know how Captain Rossi likes a crew to look sharp,
Barlin called back from the cockpit.
How does it affect electronic equipment? Thrawn asked.
Luckily, the dust is usually coarse enough not to get into properly sealed gear,
Lanio said.
Emphasis on properly. I've never seen a civilian transport yet where everything was up to proper code.
In fact, I'd bet 50 credits we don't find anyone aboard, Jakib said. Automated beacon, dead in space. Odds are they got dust in their hyperdrive, couldn't fix it, and took off.
I'll take that bet,
Lanio said.
Easy, Eli warned. No gambling aboard ship, remember?
But we're not aboard ship, sir,
Jakib said innocently.
This vessel is considered part of the Blood Crow, Thrawn said. If static locking has such serious disadvantages, why is it still used?
It's really only used with Tabana gas, sir,
Lanio said.
The stuff's highly explosive and highly valuable. Big draw for hijackers. Static locking the tanks makes stealing them a risky business.
Which means it'll be equally tricky for us if Captain Rossi wants them brought aboard, Chakib warned. Hopefully it'll just be a matter of fixing whatever's wrong and flying the whole freighter to Ancien.
There was a gentle bump.
We're here, sir,
Barlin reported.
Engaging locking collar. Okay, we're set.
Atmosphere inside reading normal. Lights on low. Temperature mid-range, gravity functional and standard. Scrub is still running.
Lifeform readings? Thrawn asked.
Nothing useful, sir,
she replied.
The static locking's still screwing all that up. Okay, scrub's finished. Negative on dangerous chemicals or microorganisms. We're good to go, Lieutenant.
Thank you, Thrawn said. Ensign Vonto, take Tex Lanio and Chakib aft to the engine section. Ensign Barlin and I will go forward to the bridge.
2 minutes later, Eli and the two techs were moving down the freighter's central passageway, their footsteps echoing in the gloom.
Really hate derelict, sir,
Lanio muttered as they walked. Her hand, Eli noted, was resting on the grip of her holstered blaster.
Too many ghost ship stories when I was growing up.
I heard my share, too, Eli said. Most are just stories. The rest are real incidents embellished out of all recognition. I'm sure this place will look a lot cheerier once Barlin gets to the lighting controls, Chakib said helpfully.
Yeah, I don't think so,
Lanio growled.
All the light in the world.
Without warning, the corridor erupted in a blinding blaze of light.
Freeze!
A taut voice said from somewhere behind them.
You hear me? Freeze! Or I swear I'll shoot you where you stand!
Vanto's expression is wary as he comes into view, but the tension that was in his voice when he gave the alarm has subsided. He holds an unfamiliar blaster loosely in his hand.
Ensign Vonto, report, Thrawn ordered.
Lieutenant,
Vonto said.
He gives a brief formal nod of greeting and acknowledgement. His fingers are half-curled in the silent signal that confirms all is indeed well.
May I present Neville Signy? He apparently mistook us for someone else.
Did he?
Thrawn said.
Signy is a human, with dark hair and the textured skin of one who has worked long years in bright sunlight. He sits on the deck at Vanto's feet. His torso is hunched forward, his face buried in his hands. His expression is largely hidden, but the tensed muscles in his neck and arms hold fear and weariness. His clothes are stained with the same dust that clings to the Imperial's own uniforms. His hands show the scarring and calluses of mild physical labor.
Whom did he mistake us for?
Signy? Vonto prompted.
Yes, sir,
Signy said.
Still seated, he straightens up and lowers his hands. His face is well-fleshed, with no signs of malnutrition. The skin around his eyes is taut with stress, as are the muscles in his throat. His eyes are dark and wary.
Please believe that I thought you were...
He breaks off, and his eyes widen.
Lieutenant Thrawn asked you a question, Signy,
Vonto said.
Yes,
Signy said.
He blinks twice and turns his eyes to Vonto.
Sorry, my name... No, you already know my name. Sorry. The thing is, we were attacked by pirates.
Who were they? Vonto asked. Did they mention any names? Were they wearing any kind of insignia?
No,
Signy said.
No names.
His lips twitch.
At least, nothing I heard. I sort of ran.
There is a brief silence.
Where did you run?
Vanto asked.
There's a storage locker back there where Captain Fitz stores her private food stocks.
Signy angles his head behind him.
Specialized stuff she picks up along our route that she sells whenever she can make a profit. We used to pilfer it, taking from the back and keeping the front intact so she wouldn't notice as quickly.
Which left enough room behind the packages where you could hide?
I know what you're thinking,
Signy said.
His voice becomes harsh.
I should have stood with the others. Maybe fought. Maybe...
He broke off, his throat working.
And then they took them.
His voice drops in volume.
All of them. I heard someone say they were going to go back to their base and find a slicer to get the ship running. But they took everyone else with them.
What happened to the hyperdrive? Thrawn asked.
I've got Lanio checking it out, Vanto said. Best guess is that someone locked it down before the pirates could get to it.
Yes, that was it, Signy said. Captain Fitz locked the hyperdrive. I heard them threatening her. Or maybe it was Toom, our engineer, who locked it.
He squeezes his eyes tightly shut.
I heard screams.
You thought we were the returning pirates?
Thrawn asked.
Yes.
Signy opens his eyes and waves one hand at Vanto.
I was scared, and I didn't focus on the uniforms. I never thought anyone would hear the beacon or come looking anyway. When I saw who you were...
He trails off.
I guess I'm lucky you didn't just shoot me for pulling a blaster on you.
We have better self-control than that,
Vanto said.
He looks at Thrawn.
Order, sir?
Contact the Blood Crow,
Thrawn said.
Signy buries his face in his hands again. The muscles in his hands are tight with tension.
Report the situation to the captain, and inform her I will be making a thorough examination of the ship.
Except for the power compartment, sir,
Lanio said as she joined them from around a corner.
There's a bad leak in the main reactor.
Oh, yes, don't go in there!
Signy said quickly.
He drops his hands from his face. His back stiffens as he looks up.
Sorry, I should have warned you about that.
It's okay,
Lanio said, her voice dry.
The indicators and hatch interlocks were a pretty solid hint.
Oh, right.
Signy sighs. His torso folds over again in a slump.
And then tell her, Thrawn continued to Vanto, that I recommend bringing a full operational crew aboard while we attempt to restart the hyperdrive. If we are unable to do so, I recommend attempting to disengage the static locks so that the Tabana cylinders can be removed and transferred to the Blood Crow.
Lanio's mouth drops open a few millimeters.
Yes, Vanto said cautiously. Sir, I suspect the captain will find your suggestions a bit excessive.
She may,
Thrawn said.
Signy's face is still hidden in his hands.
Nevertheless, those are my recommendations.
Yes, sir, Vanto said. I'll submit them immediately.
Thank you, Ensign, Thrawn said. While you do that, Tech Lanio will show me to the Tabana cylinders.
Lanio clenches her jaw firmly.
Yes, sir, she said. This way.
Chapter 8.
Leadership and obedience are the two legs on which a warrior's life is balanced. Without both, victory cannot be achieved. Leadership depends on information and comprehension, not so obedience. Sometimes a commander may choose to share details of his plan. Often he may not. In either case, obedience must be instant and complete. Such automatic response relies on trust between commander and those commanded. And that trust can only be obtained through leadership.
Eli had expected Captain Rossi to take Thrawn's recommendations badly. He wasn't disappointed.
A full op crew?
Rossi echoed incredulously.
Is he out of his mind?
Ma'am, the cargo is extremely valuable,
Eli pointed out, fighting back a growing annoyance. Rossi had no business simply rejecting Thrawn's suggestions out of hand. But Thrawn likewise shouldn't have put Eli in the middle of this in the first place. If he wanted to pitch this crazy plan, he should have done it himself.
If we can move either the ship or the Tabana...
And if he thinks he's going to play around with 20 Tabana cylinders while my ship is in even the same solar system, he's very much mistaken.
Rossi cut him off.
Yes, ma'am,
Eli said, glowering at his comlink. Now the captain was just being overdramatic. A cascading Tabana explosion was seriously nasty, but it wasn't that bad.
But if Lieutenant Thrawn thinks it can be done, it may be worth letting him try.
It would hardly be a major loss for the Navy if he blew himself to atoms,
Rossi countered sarcastically.
But I'm not risking that much of my crew on those odds. Anyway, it's a moot point. A Hodin settlement on Moltok is getting shot at by the local McCurth boss. They need some Imperial muscle to knock their little heads together before it becomes a full-fledged war. We need to go.
Yes, ma'am,
Eli said, wishing he could just let it go and let Rossi's decision play out for better or worse upon her own head. But Signy needed protection and justice, too. So did the Imperial base, or local planetary defense force that had ordered that Tabana shipment. Besides, Thrawn was counting on him.
What if just Lieutenant Thrawn and I stayed behind? He suggested to Rossi. Possibly with one of the techs along to assist. We could try to get the ship started and maybe work on the Tabana a little. You could come back and get us after you've settled the Moltok situation.
There was a short pause, and Eli could visualize Rossi tapping her fingers on her armrest as she weighed her options. If Eli were a betting man, and if gambling were allowed aboard the Blood Crow, he would bet on the captain going with whatever option had the best chance of Thrawn blowing himself up. If the Tabana didn't do the trick, a shipload of returning pirates might.
Very well, Ensign,
Rossi said.
Inform Lieutenant Thrawn that he can have whatever equipment he needs and up to 3 crew, assuming he can find that many willing to volunteer. You'll stay with him regardless, of course. An important officer like that can't be without his aid.
Eli scowled. He'd called it all right.
Yes, ma'am, he said. I'll deliver your message immediately.
Given the circumstances, Rossi no doubt assumed the repair party would consist only of Thrawn and Eli. It was probably a surprise to her, and not a pleasant one, when Barlin, Lanio, and Jakeeb all instantly volunteered to stay as well.
I'm gratified you were all willing to help,
Signy said, as he and the others watched from the Dromedar's bridge as the Blood Crow jumped to light speed.
I just hope it doesn't end badly for you.
It will not, Thrawn assured him.
Ensign Barlin, Tech Lanio, you may begin when ready.
Yes, sir,
Barlin said, seating herself at the helm station.
Lanio?
On it, ma'am,
Lanio said, pulling a chair over to the main computer station.
Here we go.
What are they doing?
Signy asked, lowering his voice to a whisper, as if afraid he would disturb their work.
They are attempting what is known as an asymmetric backdoor,
Thrawn told him.
It is a hidden code, programmed into many ship computers for precisely this purpose.
Signy whistled softly.
I've never heard of that. Nice.
He threw a sideways look toward Thrawn.
Never heard of a non-human as an Imperial officer, either. You're some sort of Pantoran, right?
Eli took a breath,
preparing to point out that Pantorans didn't have red eyes.
Of a sort, yes,
Thrawn said. What I am is a lieutenant in the Imperial Navy.
Right, Signy said again. Sorry, I didn't mean to pry. I just... no offense.
None taken, Thrawn said. Ensign Vanto, go to engineering and unpack the crates I had delivered aboard. We shall join you shortly.
Yes, sir,
Eli said, frowning slightly. There was something about the way Thrawn was acting. Something he couldn't quite put his finger on. Was he worried about the ship? The Tabana gas? The pirates? Captain Rossi? Actually, when he put it that way, it wasn't surprising at all that Thrawn might feel preoccupied. The crate had been left just outside the cargo bay, where the line of Tabana cylinders stood against the hull. Eli glanced into the bay. Jakeeb was in there, taking the readings Thrawn had ordered, then set to work on the crate. He got the end open, and felt his eyes widen. He'd had no idea that Thrawn was bringing...
What in the world?
Signy's stunned voice came from behind him.
Is that a buzz droid?
It is, Thrawn said calmly. I am surprised you recognize it.
They weren't exactly a secret weapon,
Signy said, walking up to Eli and crouching beside him to peer into the crate.
That's a Mark I, isn't it? Rare. Is it functional? Please tell me it isn't functional.
Of course it is functional, Thrawn said. It would hardly be of use otherwise.
Signy looked at Thrawn, then at the buzz droid, then back at Thrawn.
Okay, you've lost me,
he said.
These things were designed to eat starfighters, right?
They also have other uses, Thrawn said. Come, I will explain.
He turned and walked through the hatchway into the cargo bay. Signy watched him go, then turned to Eli.
Is he serious? About using buzz droids in there, I mean?
I assume so, Eli said.
Really?
Signy looked at the hatchway again, then shrugged and gestured to Eli.
After you, he said. This I have to see.
Thrawn was standing with Jakeeb, the two having a quiet discussion, when Eli and Signy joined them.
Tech Jakeeb confirms my earlier assumptions, Thrawn said. The static lock does indeed seal the Tabana cylinders, but only from this side.
Excuse me, Signy asked,
sounding even more confused.
What do you mean, this side?
Thrawn gestured.
Tech Jakeeb. The lock's only on the cargo bay side of the cylinders, Jakeeb explained. See, they're fastened right against the hull with half-meter struts. That's too short a distance for the lock to go all the way around. It would short out or power drain itself out of existence. So the lock is just on the surfaces inside the bay.
Though also around the ends of the cylinder row, I assume, Eli said. He saw where Thrawn was going with this now.
Correct, Jakeeb confirmed. Just not on the backside. So if you want to get to them, your best bet is to go through the hull.
Hence the buzz droid,
Signy said, sounding awed.
I'll be damned. Why hasn't anyone thought of that before?
Oh, they have, Jakeeb said. Thing is, it's not quite as simple as it sounds.
Because?
One, you have to get a buzz droid and probably rebuild it, Jakeeb said, ticking off fingers. Two, once you've done that, big ship hulls are thicker and tougher than the old starfighters. Fair chance you'll wreck your droid before you're halfway through. Third,
he looked at Thrawn, raised his eyebrows.
Third is that you will necessarily drain one of the cylinders into space when you cut through, Thrawn said. That represents a loss that many are unwilling to accept.
Though losing 1 out of 20 isn't bad percentage-wise, Signy mused. Especially if the alternative is to lose all of them. So I gather once you have that cylinder drained,
you can cut it into little pieces and dump it out your gap in the hull, which then gives you access to the others from the back. Then you just work your way down the line, cutting all the struts and freeing them one by one?
Exactly, Jakib said. Takes a while, but once you've got the first one out, it's a purely mechanical operation.
He looked at Thrawn again.
There is one other slight problem, of course. Bending the Tabana outside the ship theoretically works just fine. But if you spark the vapor in just the right way, well, there could be trouble.
As in blowing up the ship? Signy asked.
Not that much trouble, Jakib said. But it would be a mess.
Fortunately, that will not be necessary after all, Thrawn said.
His head was cocked a little to the side, Eli saw, as if he was listening to something.
Why not?
Signy asked. In answer, Thrawn pulled out his comlink.
Ensign Varlin, do I hear the hyperdrive going active?
Yes, sir, you do.
Varlin's voice came faintly from the comlink.
Got through the lock, and we're just about ready to go. Does Signy have the destination coordinates, or are we just going to take the ship to Ancyon?
Neither, I'm afraid, Signy said softly.
Frowning, Eli turned to him and froze. The wretched, nervous, ill-fated crewman had vanished. In his place was someone else. Quiet, calm, and supremely confident. A small blaster held steady in his hand.
What the hell?
Jakib breathed. Signy ignored the comment. Pulling out a comlink with his free hand, he flicked it on.
We're good, he said. Three with the Tabana, two on the bridge.
He raised his eyebrows toward Thrawn.
I'd appreciate it if you'd order Barlin and Lanio to surrender quietly. Why should I deprive them of their right and duty to defend their lives?
Thrawn countered.
Because if they surrender, they won't be harmed, Signy said. I give you my word.
And these?
Thrawn asked, inclining his head toward Eli and Jakib.
None of you will be harmed, Signy said.
All we want is the Tabana.
He wrinkled his nose.
Well, and the ship too. I guess that goes without saying.
Before Thrawn could answer, a dozen large, rough-looking men appeared, swarming through the hatchway into the cargo bay. One of them, a thin man with a braided beard, raised his blaster.
Blasters down!
Signy snapped.
They've surrendered. No shooting. Angel, I said down.
The man with the braided beard ignored him.
What the hell is that?
He demanded, jabbing the blaster at Thrawn.
That, Signy said, is a lieutenant of the Imperial Navy. Now lower your weapon.
He looked at Thrawn.
Lieutenant?
For a moment, Thrawn studied him. Then he raised his comlink again.
Ensign Varlin, a group of pirates are on their way. They've been ordered not to harm you if you surrender without resistance. You will do so.
Sir?
Surrender, Ensign. That is an order.
Thrawn put the comlink away.
Would you care to accept my surrender personally, Mr. Signy?
That's all right, Lieutenant,
Signy said, not moving.
I get no particular enjoyment out of defeating my opponents. Angel? Disarm them, please.
Yeah.
Angel grinned evilly.
'Cause I do enjoy it, so don't get clever.
He gestured three of his soldiers forward. Out of the corner of his eye, Eli saw Jakib brace himself as he prepared for action.
As you were, Jakib, he murmured. You've been given an order.
Jakib hissed out a sigh.
Yes, sir.
A moment later, the Imperials were disarmed.
Good,
Signy said. To Eli's eye, he looked more relaxed now that the risk of combat was past.
Better call your ship, Angel.
Already called,
Angel said.
I suppose you want me to toss this crowd in with the others?
That was the deal, Signy said. No deaths, no injuries.
Oh, and in case I didn't mention it, I already have people on the ground at the drop point to make sure you deliver everyone safely.
Well, you know now, things don't always go the way you want to,
Angel warned. His eyes, Eli noted, hadn't left Thrawn for a minute.
Sometimes there are accidents. Sometimes there's trouble. There can be...
Sometimes there are consequences you really don't want to face, Signy said. He hadn't raised his voice, but something in his tone nevertheless sent a chill up Eli's back.
Enough posturing. You have the other two Imperials? Good. Bring them down here. As soon as your ship arrives, you'll transfer them over. I trust you've decided which of your men will help me bring the Dromedar to port.
Oh, yeah, I got your team,
Angel said, still eyeing Thrawn.
Starting with me,
Signy frowned.
There's no need for you to come personally, he said. Getting the cylinders will take some time. Whether we break the static lock or use Lieutenant Thrawn's idea of cutting them out through the hull. Plenty of time for you to drop the prisoners and rejoin us.
I know,
Angel said.
I just like your company, that's all.
He nodded toward Thrawn.
I was just saying that accidents do happen. Not saying they would or wouldn't. Just saying they could.
Signy gazed at him, an unreadable expression on his face. He looked at Thrawn, back at Angel. Eli held his breath.
Let me sweeten the pot, Signy said. Did you notice that box in the passageway on your way in?
Yeah,
Angel said.
Is that a buzz droid?
It is indeed, Signy said. Take it as a bonus. It's probably worth what?
He held up a hand toward Thrawn.
200 credits, as it is, Thrawn said.
Signy snorted.
You have no idea, Lieutenant. That's a Mark I, Angel. At current prices, it's probably 1,000 credits just for the Corps' Dunium shell.
Angel threw a startled look at the droid.
It's got a Dunium shell?
Refined, case-hardened, and ready for the right buyer to pull it off and drop it on the black market,
Signy confirmed. 1,000 credits.
200 each for 5 otherwise worthless Imperials.
Just to keep them alive. Angel scrunched up his nose.
Fine,
he said reluctantly.
Sure, I guess so.
If that's not good enough, consider this, Signy said. If I hadn't persuaded them to surrender, they would have fought, and some of your men would be dead right now. Maybe even you.
I said fine,
Angel said scornfully.
They keep their noses clean. I'll dump them with the rest. Happy?
Signy inclined his head.
You may not realize this, Angel, but it pays to build a reputation for keeping your word.
Not to the folks I work with, it doesn't,
Angel said sourly.
Fine. Let's get this over with. So just because I don't have your plate crystal reputation, you think I can't be trusted to do what I said?
Angel looks back over his shoulder at his prisoners and the other pirates. His eyes are narrowed, his lips twisted with the corners downward. The muscles in his throat and back are tight.
Not at all, Signy said.
His tone is calm. His words conciliatory. His movements are careful and precise. His face shows little expression, but there is a tight muscle behind his cheek.
As long as I was here, I thought I'd check up on the other prisoners. Your men were a little rough on a couple of them.
Hey! You throw a punch at a Q-loss, it comes back with interest, Angel growled. They're lucky I didn't shoot them dead.
Yes, Signy murmured.
I suppose they are. What is a Q-Loss?
Thrawn asked.
What?
Angel demands.
His eyes narrow. His facial heat intensifying. His tone is cautious and suddenly angry. Perhaps indicating regret for speaking the word.
It is a word I have not heard before, Thrawn said. Ensign Vonto?
I don't know it either, Vanto said.
His tone is cautious, but interested.
Some slang thing, I guess. Probably means idiot.
Angel takes a step forward toward Vanto. His expression is suddenly furious. His hands form into fists.
Listen, pretty boy. Oh.
Enough, Signy said. Move on, Angel. We're on a schedule.
The Dromedar's crew were locked inside a large metal-barred cage that had been built into the back third of the pirate ship's aft starboard cargo bay. There were 10 of them. 7 humans of varying ages, sizes, and skin tones. 2 Gron, each with the 3 eyes and goat-like snouts of their species, and 1 Togruta, her cone-horn montrals and striped headtails making her prominent among the prisoners.
The Togruta watches as the new prisoners approach, her hands rubbing slowly, vertically along one of the bars of their prison. She looks briefly at each of the Imperials, then turns her attention to Angel.
They reach the cage. Angel took a chained key from around his neck and unfastened the deadlock securing the cage door. The lock was a mechanical style, impervious to electronic lock breaking. The key itself was an elaborate wavy shape with multiple nubs and indentations, likely difficult or impossible to duplicate. 3 of the pirates leveled their blasters at the prisoners in the cage as Angel disengaged the lock. He swung the door open and gestured.
Go!
He ordered. Angel waited until the 5 Imperials were inside, then closed the door behind them and resealed the lock.
Satisfied?
He asked Signy. Angel handed the key to one of the other pirates, who hung the chain around his own neck and pushed the key deep under his shirt.
For now, Signy said. Remember, they all get dropped off as agreed, unharmed.
He raises his eyebrows in silent challenge.
No accidents. Remind your men.
Don't worry, Angel growled. You lubs, back to your stations. I want you at the Trapo in 6 days.
He looks again at Signy, his eyes narrow.
And be sure you don't bruise any of them when you drop them off. Come on, let's get out of here.
He left the cargo bay and headed forward, followed by his men.
Signy gives the prisoners a final look. His lips press tightly together, then follows.
I gather you're our rescue squad?
One of the other humans in the cage asked.
Her lip is twisted. Perhaps with contempt or sarcasm?
Something like that, Vanto said. This is Lieutenant Thrawn. I'm Ensign Vanto. Are you Captain Fitz?
Yeah,
the woman said.
So it's not good you, too.
Who, Signy?
Yeah,
Fitz said.
Got aboard the Dromedar with a fake authorization, and then managed to get the drop on everyone.
He didn't get everyone,
Lanio corrected.
He said you locked down the hyperdrive.
Yeah,
Fitz said again.
For all the good it did us. So he talked you into starting it up for him?
More or less, Vanto said.
Fitz swore.
So that's it. The ship's gone, the Tabana's gone, and we're done. They might as well kill us.
I wouldn't give up hope quite yet, Vanto said.
Lieutenant? Not yet, Ensign,
Thrawn said.
Patience.
Not yet what?
Fitz asked.
Hey, bright eyes, I'm talking to you.
Probably figuring out what he's going to say in his report,
one of the other prisoners said.
Gotta make this mess look good somehow.
Watch your mouths, Vanto warned. That's an officer of the Imperial Navy you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm real impressed.
I said, watch your mouths.
Vanto does not raise his voice, but the effect on the prisoners is immediate. Fitz gives him a covert look and lowers her eyes. Her facial glow grows brighter.
Sorry,
she said in a low voice.
Thank you,
Vanto said.
And if you think Lieutenant Thrawn is wasting time with excuses, you're badly mistaken.
Lieutenant?
Another moment, Thrawn said.
Look, Lieutenant,
Fitz began.
He said, wait, Vanto said.
For what?
Fitz clenches her teeth, then forces them to relax.
What are we waiting for?
For Signy and the others to reboard the Dromedar and jump to light speed,
Thrawn said.
I'm counting out the estimated time now.
You want him to get away with our ship?
Be quiet, Captain, Vanto said.
But...
I said, quiet,
Vanto repeated.
Again, his voice remained steady and controlled. But the purpose and confidence again quiet Fitz's protest.
I won't ask again.
The cage fell silent. Thrawn continued to count. And then, it was time.
Teglanio, are you familiar with the control electronics for a ship of this sort? He asked.
Not this type specifically, sir,
Lanio said.
She peers through the metal bars at the entrance to the cargo bay.
But I looked at the engine control layout on our way through, and it seemed pretty standard. What do you need me to do?
If we isolate the bridge, can we fly the ship from here?
A murmur passes among the prisoners.
Probably,
Lanio said.
Ensign Barlin?
I think we can do it, Lieutenant,
Barlin agreed.
It'll take some quick rewiring, though. If the pirates are fast enough, they may be able to disable some of the circuits before we can override them.
I think we can keep them occupied,
Thrawn said.
Sounds great,
Captain Fitz said.
Except that the circuits are out there, and we're in here.
I'm guessing not much longer, Captain,
Vanto said.
Lieutenant, do you need us to give you room?
Not at all, Ensign.
Thrawn removed his insignia plaque.
You asked me once what I would do with the spare plaque Commandant Deanlark gave me at the Academy.
Vanto leans closer, frowning. He studies the insignia plaque and the electronic components and micro-switches partially visible from the back. His frown clears.
That's a beck and call, isn't it?
It is,
Thrawn said.
Wait a second,
Fitz said.
Are you saying that your ship is close enough to call?
No, that doesn't make any sense.
Our ship is long gone,
Vanto said.
He smiles.
But that's not what he's calling.
Then what?
Fitz demanded. 5 seconds later, she received her answer. Clone Wars-era holos showing buzz droid attacks on Republic starfighters were impressive enough. But such combat had taken place in the vacuum of space, with only faint sounds recorded via metal conduction. The droid, now cutting and grinding its way through the cargo bay bulkhead toward them, was far louder than Thrawn had expected.
Move back,
he called over the noise, as the edges of the blades, the points of the drill, and the brilliant blade of the plasma torch appeared through the bulkhead metal. Once the droid made it through, the only thing between it and the beck and call would be the cage itself. The timing would be critical to allow it to cut through the bars, but not continue toward the remote and the one who held it. The droid emerged through the bulkhead, throwing off a few final shards of metal. It continued its interrupted vector across the bay,
closing into its spear shape as it flew. It struck the cage and popped open again, its hook appendages gripping one bar as the circular saw and torch attacked two of the others. A meter-long section of one of the bars sliced through, clattered to the deck, and the blade moved on to the next bar.
This is going to take too long,
Vanto warned. Thrawn had already estimated the droid's progress.
Vanto was correct.
Agreed,
Thrawn said. He took two steps to his right, moving the beck and call to the far side of the cage door. The droid shifted toward him. Thrawn repositioned the beck and call, bringing the droid directly onto the door. One final adjustment, and the droid's saw began eating into the lock mechanism. Thrawn looked at the entrance to the bay. Within a few more seconds, the pirates in this section of the ship would surely come to investigate. He looked back at the cage door, again gauging the droid's progress. The timing would be close.
Look out!
One of the prisoners shouted. Three pirates appeared abruptly through the hatchway.
Their pace falters, their eyes widening and their mouths dropping open as they see the buzz droid eating through the cage.
A second later, they recovered from their surprise and reached for their blasters, their hands fumbling slightly with the last remnants of their shock.
Their expressions changed from surprise to anger.
Thrawn reached through the bars of the cage and flipped the beck and call over their heads to land on the engine room deck behind them. Instantly, the buzz droid closed down its cutting instruments, unhooked itself from the cage, and shot across the bay toward the pirates.
The pirates' eyes again widened.
Their blasters had been lining up on the prisoners. Now they turned the weapons instead toward the approaching droid and fired. Even with a dunium inner shell, the buzz droid's inner mechanism was vulnerable to blaster fire. But the outer spherical shell was much stronger. All three of the pirates' shots struck, but none made it through. The pirates fired again, all three shots missing. Two of the men hurled themselves to the deck, attempting to evade the droid's approach. The third was too slow, and was struck a glancing blow that sent him spinning. Beside Thrawn, Jakeeb stepped forward, grabbed the top bars of the cage, and slammed the soles of both feet against the door. The remaining undamaged part of the lock mechanism snapped with the impact. Jakeeb dropped back to the floor and ducked out of the cage. Barlan, Lanio, and the rest of the prisoners were right behind them. There was a brief melee of combat. When it ended, all three pirates had been reduced to unconsciousness.
Well done,
Thrawn said.
Ensign Vanto, Tech Jakeeb, Captain Fitz, take their blasters and guard the access to this section. Ensign Barlan and Tech Lanio, the control system.
Yes, sir,
Barlan said. She hurried toward the control boards, Lanio and three of the Dromedar's crew behind him.
We'll need more weapons if we're going to make a stand,
Captain Fitz said.
They will most likely be unnecessary,
Thrawn said.
The pirates still forward of the entrance hatch will not be joining us.
What's going to stop them?
Fitz asked.
The internal hatch safety interlocks, Thrawn said.
He pointed forward toward the flashing red lights in the distance.
Even now, the entrance chamber and a midship section of the ship have been opened to vacuum.
What?
Fitz asked.
Her muscles tense with surprise and puzzlement.
How in the world?
Relax, Captain, Vanto said. He smiles with satisfaction and grim humor. Lieutenant Thrawn is always prepared. And as it happens, he also owns a second buzz droid. Fitz is silent 2 seconds. Then a slow smile spreads across her face.
How very unfortunate for our pirates,
she said.
Lieutenant Thrawn, I believe the ship is yours. What course shall we set?
Chapter 9.
A great tactician creates plans. A good tactician recognizes the soundness of a plan presented to him. A fair tactician must see the plan succeed before offering approval. Those with no tactical ability at all may never understand or accept it. Nor will such people understand or accept the tactician. To those without that ability, those who possess it are a mystery. And when a mind is too deficient in understanding, the resulting gap is often filled with resentment.
Let me get this straight,
Captain Rossi growled, peering up at Thrawn and Eli.
You're saying you let yourself be captured?
Yes, ma'am, Thrawn said. It seemed the simplest way to find and rescue the Dromedar's crew.
Damn stupid risk, Rossi said flatly. Especially when you didn't even know if they were still alive.
I thought the chances were good that they were, ma'am, Thrawn said. Signy is not a malicious or casual killer. If he were, he would have simply shot the three of us once Ensign Barlin unlocked the hyperdrive. Our backs were to him, and he had a clear shot.
Which makes two stupid risks, Rossi said. And not just of your own life, but also those of my crew.
It was not a serious risk, Thrawn said. I was watching his reflection in the Tabana cylinders. If he had prepared to shoot, I would have noted the change in his stance in time to stop him.
Rossi gave a snort.
You have an answer for everything, don't you?
Part of my job is to anticipate the actions of our enemies.
Rossi threw a look at Eli, as if daring him to say something. But Eli knew better. He'd seen the captain in this mood, and knew she was itching to find something she could throw back in Thrawn's face. Only in this case, she was out of luck. Thrawn had outmaneuvered Signy, he'd outmaneuvered the pirates, and he would outmaneuver Rossi, too.
Sounds more like dumb luck than sound planning,
the captain said, shifting her glare back to Thrawn and turning up the intensity a couple of notches.
There's no way you could have known Signy wasn't exactly who he claimed until he pulled that blaster.
On the contrary, ma'am. I knew he was a plant from the very beginning, Thrawn said calmly. His clothing was covered with dust, indicating he had been in the area of the Tabana cylinders and the engine room. A member of the crew would have warned us about the supposed reactor leak as soon as he realized we weren't pirates. Yet he didn't.
Eli winced. He'd missed that one completely.
Big mistake on his part.
More of a calculated risk, Thrawn said. He knew there was a danger that someone would notice the lapse. But he also knew that if he drew our attention to the leak, we might wonder why he had mentioned that one specific danger. That might cause us to examine the reactor compartment more closely, which he could not afford. Because if we had, we'd have walked in on the rest of the pirates,
Eli said, nodding.
That would still have led to our capture, as they outnumbered us significantly, Thrawn said. But Signy would then have lost the chance to restart the hyperdrive and take the Tabana, which was his primary objective.
Unless he forced Barlin and Lanio to do it at Blaster Point,
Eli said, a shiver running up his back. Signy might have some moral limits, but Eli wouldn't put a bent credit on finding any such ethical standards in Angel or the rest of the pirates.
He would not have succeeded.
Maybe, maybe not, Rossi said. Which brings us to your sense of priorities.
Ma'am?
You had a decision to make, Lieutenant, Rossi said. The Dromedar and its cargo, or the pirate frigate and the Dromedar's crew. You chose the latter.
She shook her head.
Wrong choice.
Thrawn's eyes flicked to Eli.
We saved the crew, ma'am, he said, sounding as confused as Eli had ever seen him. And captured several pirates and their ship.
none of which stacks up against even one tank of Tabana gas, let alone